Good morning, everyone. It's good to see everyone. And I'm the last guy you have to endure before you get the beef brisket, so we're excited about that. So hopefully we're as excited about the coming of Jesus as we are about that beef brisket. So, and I was talking to Jim a little bit before the service because I wasn't expecting to speak today, but something happened with one of the members of our church that needed to stay somewhere besides her house because her son, who takes care of her, had to go in the hospital. So Bob took that on, and he was supposed to speak. So he asked me yesterday if I would take over. So I did, and I was talking to Dr. Johns, and we basically have the same sermon. So. So maybe I can shorten it up a little bit and we can eat sooner. But anyway, well, the story is told of a farm boy who accidentally turned his wagon of corn over on the road. And there was a farmer who lived nearby, and he came out to talk to the young boy. And he said, "Hey, Johnny," he said, "why don't you just forget your troubles here that you have right now and come on in the house and have supper with us, and then I'll help you get your wagon back up on the road." And Johnny replied, he said, "Well, that's real nice of you," he said, "but I don't think my dad would be very happy with me if I did that." And the farmer said, "Well, come on, you know, what's the big deal? Come on in." And so the boy finally agreed. He said, "Okay, I'll come in." And he said, "Well, my dad really not going to like this." And so he went in, he had a big meal, and you know, after he's done, Johnny thanked the farmer, and he said, I feel a lot better now, but he said, "But I know my dad's really going to be upset." And he said, the farmer said, don't be foolish. He said, "By the way, where is your dad?" He said, "He's under the wagon." So we're going to talk today about procrastination, and fits in a lot with what Dr. Johns was speaking about. And, you know, it's easy to procrastinate. I'm probably the best procrastinator here. I don't know if you can beat me in this, but, you know, the motto people have is that, you know, never put off tomorrow what you can do today. But I kind of try to put off to tomorrow what I don't have to do today. So I don't know why that is, but I tend to procrastinate. And, you know, the greatest unscheduled event, when we think about things that we procrastinate, things that we know we got to do, but yet how about the things we don't know when they're going to happen, like the return of Christ? And that's the greatest event that's ever going to happen, and it's coming. And you know, this return of Christ, and the trumpet will sound, and he's going to come down to earth again. And you know, he's not coming as a humble servant, but he's coming as a conquering and glorious king. He's not one who is coming that you know, suffered in the flesh, but he is one who is coming to end all suffering. He's not coming as one who was judged wrongly, but he's coming as one who will judge the earth in righteousness. So, it seems like we ought to be ready for that. And even though we don't know when it's going to be, we should be ready. And so let's turn over to Matthew chapter 24, look at some of the verses that talks about that. And, you know, I thought I wasn't going to be speaking today, so I kind of gave my message on Sabbath. And it's so interesting to me that when you read the scriptures, especially in the New Testament, about the return of Christ, you could almost preach the same sermon and use multiple passages. You know, I usually preach from one text. And, you know, the other day I preached from 1 Thessalonians 4 and 5. And basically it can be the same message coming out of Matthew chapter 24 and some of the verses that we read today already. But let's turn to Matthew 24 and we'll pick it up in verse 36. It says, "No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken and the other left. Therefore keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of his servants in his house, in his household, to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, "My master is staying away a long time." And he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards. The master of the servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and at an hour he is not aware of. And he will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So we see here, Jesus is speaking about his second coming, and the emphasis is on being ready, as Dr. John said, and again, it's almost the same message, but I think it's good to hear it, that we need to be ready for when Jesus comes. And we have a lot of signs, we know that, and the point was well taken. There's always signs. There's signs in every generation. We see the ones in Matthew 24. If you turn over to 1 Timothy, we can look at some of the signs. It talks about maybe less talking about events in the world or signs in the skies, but in 1 Timothy it talks about humans and human nature. 2 Timothy chapter 3, we'll just read 5 verses there. But he says, "Mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days." And see if these don't resonate, and they probably did with every generation that's ever read these words. It says, "People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money." Well, we see that a lot today. Boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, have nothing to do with them. And I think we've had those kind of people in every generation. Is that going to increase as the times go on? It's possible, but are we seeking for those signs, or are we just going to be ready anyway? I think that's the thing that we see generally from the scriptures, is that Jesus is coming, and there's events that may happen before he gets here, and the world is not the greatest place in regards to the way people act, and that comes and goes, it seems, at times, at different generations, but we need to be ready for him to come. I'm sure in the last 2,000 years, there's been every generation when they faced a famine or a war, they thought, well, this could be the end. And we're no different today when we see things happening in our world. Is this the end times? And we just don't know. But we do need to be ready. And, that's, being that we're procrastinators, that's probably why God didn't give us the date. God is wise in that. He knows that human nature that would dictate that we'll just wait to the last minute to get ready. If you knew Jesus was coming next year on the Feast of Trumpets, you might just dilly-dally around a little bit till maybe, July or August of next year, and then you start to get serious about it. That's just the way we were made in some regards. It's kind of like buying auto insurance the day before you have an accident. Do you know? You don't know. It's the idea of being prepared. I used this illustration last week at church in our message here, but it's kind of like someone offered you a real fancy trip. And for me, I was saying, I'd like it to be, my dream trip would be that somebody's going to plant me out in the Rocky Mountains next to a trout stream with full of trout and nobody around and beautiful weather and, being able to fish, like that. But you could think of all kinds of things. Maybe it's a special beach. I was looking at pictures this week. I saw some pictures of, I think it was one of these sites that said the 20 greatest beaches in the world or something. But, you ever see those pictures of the sea chilies, and they're somewhere off the coast of India, and boy, the water's just perfectly clear, and it's white sandy beaches, and it's beautiful. And you think, boy, I'd like to go there. But somebody offers you your dream trip, and they said, but the only stipulation is that you need to be ready to go. You got to, when we say it's time to go, you got to leave. And, you know, I would imagine if something that special, you know, you would have your bags packed sitting by the door. You know, in my case, I would have my fishing rod and all my gear there, make sure it's in working order. I would be, you know, have all my stuff packed. It would be by the door. I'd be ready to go. If somebody called, I'm gone. And, you know, that's kind of like what it is for us. When Jesus comes back, it's going to be in an instant. We need to be ready for that. It's this wonderful trip that we're going to take up to meet him in the air. And we need to be ready. So, and Jesus uses the illustration in the passage we read in Matthew about a thief. And it's the same idea. You know, somebody's coming to rob your house. They're not going to let you know. You know, you need to be ready. You need to have your security system on or your shotgun in your lap or whatever, you know, or sleep with it or something like some people do, I guess. But, you know, you're ready. You're anticipating that something can happen. So we don't know when, but we need to be ready. And that's a lot of the emphasis in the New Testament. When you read a passage about Jesus coming, almost invariably right around that passage will be that you need to be ready for him coming. That it's, you know, not only is he coming, but you need to be ready for it. So will we be prepared when he comes? It seems the scriptures say a lot of people will not. And as we read there in Matthew 24, if you still have your finger there, in Matthew 24 it talks about Noah's time. It says that people will be eating and drinking and getting married. And, you know, some people have looked at that and said, well, it's just going to be an evil time like it was in the time of Moses or Noah. And it was obviously an evil time. But, you know, eating and drinking and getting married are not evil things. Those are things that God gave us, to food to eat and things to drink and getting married. Those things are of God. They're not evil things. They aren't sinful things. But I think the emphasis is that people just aren't going to care. They just don't care one bit whether or not Jesus is coming back. Most people in the world are oblivious to that fact. It's not even a part of their mindset to think about that. And even though it says that Noah was preached in those years that he was building the ark, and I'm sure even people seeing this ark being built, you know, probably nowhere close to water or an ocean that would hold this boat, you know, we're a witness to those people that something was going to happen, and they just probably scoffed about it and laughed about it. And but you know, Moses or Noah, I keep saying Moses, but it was Noah. He was a witness to them. He was a witness. He was saying, you know, there's going to be rain, and you know, this thing's, you know, people are going to be destroyed. And you know, we know that most people, you know, except for eight people, they were gone. And so they weren't prepared. And Jesus goes on to talk about the people at the time when he comes. You know, there's going to be two working side by side, you know, in the fields. And then you know, there's been some discussion about which is the one taken away. And in my opinion, you know, from what I understand, when you read that scripture in Matthew 24, it talks about the people in Noah's time were taken away. So it seems like these people that are at the mill, that the one that's, when Jesus returns, the one that's taken away is the one is not a Christian, the non-believer. It seems to me, it seems like it fits in with the context of it. But so, you know, here they are. There's two people working side by side. And, you know, the one's a believer and one's probably a witness to this person. And the one's prepared. And then the other one is just like oblivious to the whole thing. And, you know, they, even though they've had the witness of what's going to happen, they just didn't prepare. And they dismissed the warnings and they were taken away. So there's a big emphasis on preparation in the scriptures. And, you know, we think about this time of year. You know, it'll soon be fall and we'll start thinking, well, the winter's coming. And, you know, there's some like things that we get prepared for winter. If we're smart and we're wise and we're astute to the things that are going on, we'll make sure our snow blowers work. We'll make sure that we have snow shovels and that we dig them out of the shed and put them by the building like I do. Or, you know, you'll make sure that you have either a generator or some way to have temporary heat or lights. You'll make sure that, you know, if the power would go out, you'll make sure that you do have heat in your home. You'll have some way of being able to stay warm and to maybe have extra provisions. And you get prepared. You don't know when the weather's going to hit. You don't know exactly how it's going to be this winter. You know, probably in the next 5 years or maybe 10 years, it's going to get cold some winter and it's going to snow a lot and it's going to be awful, and you might be stranded in your house for a week. But you know, you prepare for that. You get ready for that. That's a wise thing to do. And it's so similar with the return of Christ. We need to be ready. We need to be ready when he comes back. And you know, there's all kinds of illustrations. You know, the pop quiz in school. You ever have that dream where you go to school, or you have these dreams and you go to school, all of a sudden you find out you hadn't been in class for all the whole time, the whole semester, and all of a sudden it's the day of the final exam, and it's like, oof, what do I do? And I have that dream. I used to have a lot more. I think it's when you're not prepared for something. I used to have those dreams about church. You know, I'd come to church and, oh, you're preaching it. Oh, am I? And I said, well, I got to find my Bible, really. And you can't find your Bible, and it's an exasperating dream. But it's a lot of times when you're not prepared, somewhat like I am today. I should have had that dream last night, probably. You know, that's a whole idea of preparation. You know, we see that in Matthew 25 with the 10 virgins. You know, 5 were ready, 5 weren't. We need to get prepared. And, you know, he's going to come whether we're prepared or not. You know, if you're not ready, that's not going to delay his timeline. He's still coming. And, you know, that may sound harsh and cruel when he comes, you know, and all of a sudden you say, oh, I wasn't ready. You know, I'm not like the virgins that didn't have the oil, and, you know, and they were left out. And it's like a child saying, you know, your children will say, oh, can I have one more chance? Just one more chance. Just one more chance. And it's too late. It's too late. So we should be really compelled by the scriptures to be ready. Really, as believers, there's no excuse for not being ready. Whether we're prepared or not, he is coming. And, you know, it says there in Matthew, it says to watch. And sometimes, you know, watch just means like you're looking or something, we think. But watch really has this idea of guarding. And, you know, it's even used as the term of being in prison. It's used, that word's translated as a prison. So the idea is that you're guarding something that's very special. You want to make sure that you are ready for him when he returns. Well, how do we get ready? And what can happen? There in Matthew 25... you know, we're told to keep watch or to be alert and to be guarding. But those last verses from 45 on give us even some more insight. Jesus tells a little parable here about a wise, faithful and wise servant. And it says this faithful and wise servant, when the master went away, was put in charge of his possessions. And, you know, we're put in charge of what God, you know, we're given stewardship of the things that God has given us. We're given stewardship of the things that Christ has done for us. We have responsibility as Christians to do what he's asked us to do. You know, over and over, there's New Testament parables about giving us talents or giving us cities or whatever. You know, it's a responsibility we have as Christians to do his pleasure. But what if we don't do that? What if we become like this servant, it says here? You know, the one, he said the good servant, you know, would get all that his possessions of the master when he came back. But what about this other servant, this one that seems to have lost his way, one that seems to think, you know, as we read in those passages earlier in 2 Peter where people start scoffing and saying, you know, where is this coming? You know, why is it taking so long? You know, is this really true? And, you know, they start to doubt. And, you know, Jesus brings these two people up, and this person up in this parable about what they start to do. And I think I can speak to us, because I think we can fall into that trap sometimes too. You know, first of all, he says, you know, this servant begins to beat his fellow servants. And to me, that seems like it's speaking to us about the way that we treat our fellow believers. You know, Jesus said we're supposed to love our neighbors, and I think that extends even beyond the church. But, you know, within the church, we're supposed to really love each other. You know, this is how people are going to know that we're God's disciples, is if we have love for one another. And, you know, if we don't do that, if we get to the point where we think, well, his returns are way off, and I want to, we start getting caught up in things of the world, and I want my way, and, you know, it can be that way even in a church among the believers, believe it or not. I'm sure you, maybe you've never experienced that. I have, but it does happen. But, you know, it shouldn't be that way. We should love one another. We should have this love for one another that does not get diminished. You know, if you went farther on in Matthew 25, and it's interesting to me, Matthew 25 seems to really just expand on these things that Jesus is speaking on in Matthew 24. But, you know, he gives this parable about these sheep and goats. And the thing that separates them is whether and how they treated others. You know, if you did these things, these good things to people, just like you did them to the Lord himself. So we don't want to get caught up where we're not doing those things. You know, well, I'm just tired. I'm, you know, Jesus doesn't seem to be, he's coming. Things seem to be getting worse and nothing happens. And, you know, we can get caught up in that. Maybe we think we can procrastinate. But, you know, Jesus said we're supposed to love our neighbor. We're to love one another. So, you know, this servant here starts to beat his fellow servants, you know. And we don't want to do that. We want to make sure that we're being responsible in that way and living the way that God has told us to live. We don't want to be separated by that when Jesus comes that we didn't treat each other. So, you know, just like children can be brutal to each other, you know, especially when the parent's not watching around the corner. If you ever see little kids, they'll start to fight, but as soon as the parent walks in the room, they'll straighten up. And, you know, our parent, in a sense, we think he doesn't see us. Maybe he's around the corner, but he does see us. But, you know, let's act responsibly in that way. And the second thing, and not only the way we treat others, but he goes on to talk about this servant that, you know, thought the master was not coming back. He said that he began to eat and drink with the drunkards. And, you know, the scriptures tell us that Jesus ate with sinners and drank with sinners. And, you know, I think this is saying a little more than that. There's nothing wrong with us being around people that are, you know, not Christians, and maybe even people that are live a pretty bad lifestyle, because we can be a witness to them. And we have to be careful of that. We don't want to be influenced by that, but you know, there's a place for that. But this person is, you know, he's caught up in the world, if you will. You know, he's saying, he's making this conscious decision to say, you know, Jesus isn't coming, and this seems to be something that's delaying, and I can just go do what I want and maybe procrastinate this a little bit longer before I start serving God, and I'll just do what I want. And, you know, he starts to hang out with maybe characters that he shouldn't be, and starting to be influenced with them, and, you know, saying, I'm going to just do what I want for a while, or I'm going to go out and have some fun. And he makes this conscious decision to start living away from God. And yet at the same time, still saying, I'm a believer. And, you know, that doesn't work. You know, Jesus said that he would give him a place with the hypocrites. And, you know, how many times can we get caught up and get, you know, if you will, we can get drunk on what the world has to offer. You know, there's so many things that are intoxicating in the world we live in. You know, between, you know, money and entertainment and sports and, you know, promiscuity or, you know, promiscuous sex, you know, there's power, there's, you know, we can, there's all kinds of things to get drunk on. You know, some things that are just so intoxicating, you know, they're so attractive, they're so, you know, they're so compelling for us. And yet, you know, if we knew Jesus was returning today, we wouldn't think about doing those things. But yet, sometimes we think, you know, is he coming? And maybe I can touch on that a little bit. We want to be very careful that we're treating each other good, and we're also not getting caught up in things that we shouldn't get caught up in. You know, you wouldn't want to get caught like that with Jesus returning today and living a lifestyle that's not right. Well, Jesus uses the illustration of a marriage often, and we are the bride of Christ, and there's a lot of preparation that goes into weddings. There's a lot of time, there's a lot of effort, there's a lot of a bride getting herself ready. And, you know, I think the point's well taken that a bride, you know, used to be that they wore this dress of white because it showed their purity. And, you know, that's what it represents. And the Bible talks about us wearing these this clothing of white to show that we are pure people. So, you know, are we that? Are we dressed and are we ready for this wedding day? You know, a bride wouldn't just all of a sudden say, okay, I'm not going to prepare and, you know, I'm just going to show up on the wedding day. And that doesn't work. You know, that would be a disaster. So we need to be ready. We need to be prepared. And we need to practice good stewardship with our life and how we treat others and how we live. So Jesus is coming again. And again, the question, are you ready? He certainly always relates those two, it seems. He's coming, and you need to get ready for that. And let's go to 2 Peter. I got two verses I'll finish with. But in 2 Peter chapter 3, and Dr. Johns was there a little bit in part of that passage, but we'll read a little farther along than he went. And starting in verse 10, he said, "But the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything in it will be laid bare. And since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to be? You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. That day will bring about the destruction of the heavens by fire, and elements will melt in the heat. But in keeping with his promise, we are looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth, the home of righteousness." So, you know, we have this day coming, and he says, what kind of people ought you to be? It's pretty clear. And you know, we ought to live holy and godly lives as we look forward to that day. So, as a people, let's live the way that we're being prepared, that we're preparing for that day, we're preparing for our wedding day, we're preparing for our coronation day, whatever way you want to call it. But it's you know, it's a special day. It's a day we can look forward to, but we need to be ready for that day. And then one last verse. In 1 Corinthians 15, and Dr. Johns was there as well, but there's one verse I'd like to read. Maybe I'll just try to quote it, because I like the King James Version. I usually use the NIV, but it says, you know, "Be ye therefore steadfast and immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for your labor is not in vain in the Lord." So our labor is not in vain. It's a glorious day, but we need to be steadfast and immovable. We need to be preparing for that glorious day when Jesus returns. God bless you. And I guess Ray will lead the last song.